Welcome to another episode of You Had to Be There, the podcast where we deep dive into the world of the music industry. I'm your host, Julia Gomberg. This week, I'm thrilled to have Leah Liu, the Senior Social Media Manager at Rolling Stone. Leah is a social media master, having honed her skills since her early Tumblr years, and now spearheads social media for Rolling Stone. We talk about her close relationship with music throughout her life, her impressive career path, and how it all came together. Be sure to check out Leah's curated playlist, which you can find in the episode show notes. Thank you so much for listening. Be sure to follow along on Instagram at the letter U, had to be there pod, and I'll catch you next time.
My name is Leah Liu. I am based in Brooklyn, New York, and my job title is the Senior Social Media Editor at Rolling Stone.
Sweet. And I love that we are both work neighbors and real life neighbors.
We are. I feel like we have a very good idea of each other's, like, at least commutes.
Yeah, that's very true. Yeah. Well, I'm so excited to have you on. Just can't wait to, like, pick your brain. Can you kind of share, like, what growing up, like, what was your relationship with music or even just generally, like, pop culture like?
Yeah, well, thanks for having me. First of all, I'm really excited. I've never been on as a podcast guest, but I remember a while ago, I used to say that my dream career was podcast guest.
No way.
Which is so, like, self-indulgent because no one cares about what people have to say that much. But it's a little bit of a dream come true for me. But so I was raised in Southern California in a suburb called Riverside, which is like an hour and a half, maybe out of LA if the traffic's forgiving enough.
Right.
So it was like close in proximity to where everything was happening, but far enough where it felt like it was so far away, if that makes any sense.
Yeah.
But I was raised extremely religious, like evangelical background down. And I think for a long time, my sort of scope of pop culture was quite limited just because of like the sheltered nature of, I think, wanting to be, or like not my parents necessarily, but like growing up in the church and having this sort of interesting relationship with like Christian media and then like secular media. And they were so sort of black and white and super starkly opposed to each other, at least in that environment.
Right.
So I think for actually most of my childhood and even into middle school and like beginning of high school, I was just listening to Christian rock music. So there was like Switchfoot and Skillet and like Reliant K and this band called Hawk Nelson, which was like my favorite of all time. And I always knew that I felt really strongly about music because I was even getting obsessed with these bands. And honestly, they were great. I don't know how many of them are still around, but I loved rock music in that regard. And I think that going to these concerts were like worship concerts. And so it was a very different environment. But the sort of love for music began there, I think. And then when I went to high school, that was sort of when Tumblr entered the conversation. And,
yes.
And there were like so much, there was so much possibility of like discovery on Tumblr.
Yeah.
In a way that I hadn't been able to access previously on any other social media. And I remember that sort of being like my gateway drug to like real, like quote unquote real pop culture.
Right.
And I think a lot of people can relate to that. It was just such a treasure trove of like indie artists and also like mainstream artists that I hadn't heard of.
Yeah.
And there was a whole vibe on there. It was like the moody photography and poetry that I was like, wait, this is my shit. Like that's what I like.
Yeah.
And I think that's kind of what actually expanded my taste. Or like defined my taste was just like finding things through reblogs and other strangers' blogs and like 8-tracks and SoundCloud and all this stuff. So I think that's sort of how I started to develop my own eye and taste for all things media.
That makes a lot of sense. And like, I love once you find music, it kind of sticks with you and like kind of guides you into what, you know, some more concrete way of like what you're supposed to do with it. And I think that that is so cool that it was Tumblr because, yeah, like so many bands like that I discovered were through Tumblr back in the day. And right. It just made me feel like you were part of something big. Did you post yourself a lot or are you more of a reblogger?
So there's like an embarrassing backstory to this. This is actually something I brought up in my interview getting to get this job at Rolling Stone. a part of my lore had to do with the fact that I was running like a fandom Tumblr, which is a very specific niche on its own. And I don't even know how to like define which fandom I was in. I think it started with like a childhood Harry Potter obsession, which we don't really claim the author of that series anymore, but I was obsessed with Harry Potter. And from there, it entered into this like University of Michigan musical theater group called Star Kid, which had a comedy theater spin-off of Harry Potter that starred Darren Criss. And then Darren Criss starred on Glee. And then it was just this whole like Glee, Harry Potter, really nerdy shit. It was a pretty specific fandom. Yeah. But I remember like sort of being obsessed with these TV shows and these like groups online where it all existed like on a TV or on a screen. It got me really like well-versed with like making GIFs in real time aligned with like episodes coming out or like live blogging an episode of a show or just Hollywood in general. And I think that I genuinely credit my social media career to like needing to get the first GIF from the episode out on Tumblr as fast as possible, which is like a good fraction of working a social media job for a publication, event coverage, award show coverage. Uses that same muscle, if that makes any sense.
Absolutely. Because that's intense. Like, to do that because you want to, that speaks to a talent that I don't have.
Yeah, I think it's a sickness, but like...
It seems like you thrive off of it. I'm sure there's moments where you're like, oh my God, but like, yeah, you've kept going.
I have kept going despite all odds, but I was like live tweeting the Oscars from my childhood bedroom to an audience of like 24 bots. Yeah. So it's like, I'm doing this shit for the love of the game.
That's so cool. And yeah, oh my gosh, you're like making me remember so much about the Tumblr days of like, yeah, the real time. Oh my God, the GIFs and all that. It's like crazy to think about. I miss it.
Yeah. No, I miss it too. And you can meet people and just know immediately off the bat talking to someone that they were on Tumblr.
Yes, 100%. That's so funny. When you went to college, was this something that you were continuing or did you kind of branch out from there?
Yeah, so I obviously was, when I was deciding on a major in college, I actually wanted to major for like a hot second in music itself because I grew up playing music, just the piano classically.
Oh, nice. Okay.
And it was just such a big part. Yeah, it was such a big part of my daily like extracurricular life growing up that I couldn't really imagine not doing it anymore.
Yeah.
But then obviously like the question of, for me, just like, is this actually something I want to do? Like, is it going to be easy to get like a job? Which is like, no, it's actually extremely hard to get a job playing the piano. But I also knew that I loved writing in school. Mm. And obviously the most natural blending of the two would have been writing about music. But even at the time entering college, I hadn't explored much of music journalism as a concept at all. Didn't even realize it was a thing, to be honest. And so I just ended up majoring in journalism with a writing emphasis. Basically, like I think most people know when you major in journalism in college, it's like with an emphasis usually in hard news and that kind of thing. Because we didn't really, my school didn't offer any sort of like creative or specific niche of journalism to emphasize in. So I dabbled in hard news journalism. I interned for like a local newspaper, that kind of thing. But I kind of had a hunch right away after that first internship that like hard news journalism was something I respected a lot and local journalism is something I still support a ton, but working in it was not my pace personally. And so I remember just like searching the web for any opportunity to even like work in the sort of entertainment space online, like in an online publication. So I had found one, I think they're still around. It was called Local Wolves. It's like a purely digital publication that basically was my introduction to like learning how to write on a deadline or how to like interview for the first time. And it was a very like low stakes thing just because it wasn't like, well, first of all, it wasn't paid. And second of all, it was just like a lot of college age students just doing it again for the love of the game. I actually started at that publication as an illustrator because I didn't have any clips to show them, like any evidence that I knew how to write. And I did have drawings and I loved like doodling. So I started by drawing little graphics for other people's articles.
Oh, cool.
And that was sort of my like foot in the door where I was like, hey, I exist.
Right.
But then I think I like finessed it in a way where I just like wrote one small thing and then it turned into two small things. And then
a
longer feature and then like a cover story at one point. And I think that was like what gave me a lot of confidence in the fact that you just have to like go for things and take whatever avenue is possible to like get to the place that you want to get to, which I think has just then become the sort of formula of the career that I found myself in.
Totally. I can see like the foreshadowing going on already.
Exactly. Yeah. And then there were a series of other internships after that. Like I did like a little internship, like a semester long music news internship for UpRocks. And then a couple random things in between, just like a film internship in London. And then,
oh, wow.
I remember because like internships sort of became the greatest learning blocks for me because like just the classes I was taking, they were helpful, but wasn't like getting the most out of them that I thought I could be getting.
Yeah.
So all of it was like cold emailing, like finding opportunities outside of even things that were going to give me college credits. It was just, again, I wanted to do something in like, well, here's another piece of lore. I went to Bible college. All of these, things. I went to a college that, I don't know how they're doing, like how their perspective is on these things now. Mm. But when I was going there, I don't know necessarily how, credible these internships were seeming to that specific school's curriculum.
Right.
Especially because they were extremely quote unquote secular and entertainment focused, but it wasn't necessarily like encouraged, I would say. Mm-hmm. But anyways, I remember entering my senior year and like I had an internship every semester pretty much. So I was like, well, what's my last one going to be, you know?
Right.
And I remember just like going on random job sites and applying to just like anything I saw. Like I wasn't even reading the description at that point. Yeah. I was just like, whoever want me kind of thing.
Totally. Yeah.
And up until this point, I think it bears knowing that I hadn't done a social media specific internship yet. Mm. It was all writing. It was all journalism based. And I guess I had applied. Again, I say guess because I just truly like cast my net so wide. Yeah. I guess I had applied to an internship at The Hollywood Reporter. For a social media intern, and that ended up being the only one that got back to me with an interview. I went into their offices. I was in LA at the time, interviewed, got this internship, and then truly just started this whole new industry, or started working and learning about this whole new industry I didn't even know existed, which was what I was doing on Tumblr professionally.
Right. Whoa. Yeah.
You know, and I was like, oh, this is thrilling, because I had some really great bosses, I guess is the word for them, or instructors there that really taught me the ropes of just like analytics for each platform and the nitty gritty of like how to live tweet an award show on a brand account and how to like crop pictures fast and how to post on Instagram and timing and all these things you don't really think about when you look at a brand social media until you actually social media. But yeah, it was such a great experience for me. I ended up doing that for a little bit over a semester. From there, I got poached by IndieWire, who is owned by the company that we work for. Which is also a funny story. I was like at Sundance with my friend and I cold DM'd the editor there. They have a studio at Sundance. So I got interviewed there, got a job, and then was there for 3 years. And then Rolling Stone had an opening too. And I was like, well, let me give it a whirl. I did not. No, because I always like loved music as an art form, like maybe the most.
Yeah.
It was the one that felt most me. And it was always like the long term goal.
Right.
And so when I saw that Rolling Stone was hiring, I was like, let me just shoot my shot. Didn't think anything would come of it. But it worked out in such a way that I'm so grateful for.
Wow. And the rest is history. That's crazy. And the rest is history. It's so interesting. Yeah. Like a lot of that was resonating with me. Like that internship era was really different, I think, than it is now. Like, there was just like a lot more opportunity to just kind of, there was like very low risk, I feel like, in terms of reaching out. Like it felt a little less structured or formal. Like I remember my first internship in New York, I found on Craigslist and it ended up being like for a music venue. Like easily could have been kidnapped, but like totally. It worked out. And it's just a little different now. I think it's a little bit more buttoned up, but it really even though it was challenging probably in its own ways to find opportunities, I do think that there was a little bit more like freedom in that and like really discovering what you want to do, especially because it would give you these hands-on experiences that, you know, you can't really get just sitting at a desk, like you were saying.
Really, it was really scrappy because like I was just finding, I was like looking on, because I think Twitter, which is now X, which I refuse to call it that for some reason, it just feels wrong. It just doesn't feel right. Was such a like huge part of, I think, making connections in media back in like 2017. I think that was like the peak of it all. And I was just following people and then through their, like going through their following and seeing who they followed. And that's like how I built a sort of understanding of like who was working where. And now it just feels like everyone's sort of dispersed across different platforms. That it's hard. It's harder to like track people down and DM people and get a response. So,
But that is really savvy, like to figure it out that way. I think also like internships, they didn't legally have to like pay you until a certain point.
That's another part.
Like they either now, I think it's like you have to get college credit or you get paid. And I think the unpaid ones, they were a little bit more like flexible and like what you could get in return because they felt bad that they weren't paying you.
Exactly. And so there was like, it's like there were pluses or pros and cons to that. Like it was obviously like I was not making much money if any at all with those internships in college, so that should also be heated.
So when you got to Rolling Stone, like what were your thoughts? Did you have any level of imposter syndrome, or did you just kind of feel like this is where I should be and like this is right?
It's funny because I mean I'm a little bit of a woo-woo person, which is funny because I don't often talk about that in like a work setting. I feel like this is a good medium to sort of like combine the two. I remember when I first started working at IndieWire, which was my first like big girl job. I had moved to New York for it. It was like my post-college gig. And so IndieWire was already a part of PMC when I had joined. And Rolling Stone had just been acquired by PMC. It was like a newer acquisition. And so there was a lot of shuffling within offices at the time. And Rolling Stone's old offices were like up by Rockefeller Center. And they were like sort of in the process of like moving offices to come join our current office that we both work in. In the midst of that shuffle, IndieWire, being a very small company, was sort of like moved out of their current offices and like displaced into Rolling Stone's back conference room. So my first ever like quote unquote office that I ever worked in was a Rolling Stone conference room with like Rolling Stone logo painted on the wall. And it was always so random to me because I was still trying to figure out like who's owned by who, why are we working out of Rolling Stone's offices.
So true.
And like every morning sort of like walking past people who I currently now work with and like getting coffee next to these like people who are now my friends. So in some ways, like the more, again, spiritual woo-woo part of me is like, it was always meant to be. There, you can never actually like plan for something like that to happen. Like I said, when I applied for this job, I had like no, like, I really thought I was just like doing my best and like hope and like just doing it for the experience of applying. And when I actually got it, I think it was like a bit of a terrifying thing because, you know, it's Rolling Stone magazine. It's like when you like music, that's kind of like one of the biggest names, you know, you know, but it felt, I always say this kind of thing to my friends in several different contexts, whether it be like dating or finding a new apartment or getting a new job. It's that I really believe that like the things that you get or accomplish only come to you when you're ready for them. I think there's a certain level of like want that actually can deter you from actually getting the thing that you want, if that makes sense. You know, and again, this is like the really like woo-woo part of me coming in is like, I think if I got this job when I was like 21, I wouldn't have known what to do with it. You know what I mean? But there was something about all those internships and that those first jobs and moving to New York and becoming a person first. And then sort of entering this job that sort of felt more like alignment than it did like pure luck, if that makes any sense.
100% I think that's, there's like so much truth to that. It resonates with me. Like there's something intuitively about timing and like it's just, I don't think those things are coincidental. Like, you know, people can say like that's ridiculous, but like I don't know. Like, there's just, it's too intentional for these types of things. Like, even just that you were in that conference room, like, it's too intentional for that to just be arbitrary. You know what I mean?
Right. And even if it's not like a woo-woo thing, like, even if it wasn't spiritually divine, like, I think there's maybe some like validity to being like, being in certain environments subconsciously gives you the motivation to work towards those goals.
Yeah.
If anything, if I want to make it more palatable to the more logical.
Right. Yeah.
I think that's sort of what it was, where it's like, oh, I'm in this environment. I'm like around these people. I'm like seeing that it's possible. So like, I'm going to start acting as if I want to end up in some sort of position like that someday. And even when you end up there, it's like, the learning is only beginning, if that makes any sense. Like,
yeah,
it's not even like, oh, I made it, so I'm like goated. Like,
right. It's just beginning.
I made it here. Right. Like, I made it here. And now there's like really big shoes to fill and so much to like even learn. And so I think that's the mentality that I have found has been the most helpful just in terms of career.
Mm-hmm. That's how I feel being in our office. I mean, for people who don't know, the layout is like, there's just a ton of brands on tons of floors, and you get off the elevator and like, you just feel the energy of like each, like we all, I think, have a very collective energy, but like there is this sort of different collective understanding or passion that people have that like you find very inspiring and motivating, like every time you walk in.
Yeah. And I think that like, you know, I don't want to seem like, I don't want to girl boss language this up, but I think like obviously it's really cool to be able to like, even if it's not physically like in an office, but to sort of become peers with people that I was reading, like I was like opening my laptop in a college lecture and not paying attention to what was being taught because I was reading music writers to learn,
right?
And I also was like reading like film critics at the time as well to learn. And a lot of those people are now just people I call friends.
Wow.
That has just been like maybe the most rewarding thing of everything, is like not even my own career or trajectory necessarily, but it's being able to just like learn from people up close, because I was learning from them from afar for such a long time. And I think that's what makes it more exciting rather than like the job itself. It's just like the ability to, you know, talk to someone and ask them a question directly about something I had read back in like 2016 or something.
That's so cool. That's like, I actually like had a question that I didn't know how to phrase, and I feel like you just answered it well, of like, yeah, like I didn't want to be like specifically like, are there people you work with that you looked up to, but like more so the sentiment of that. And like that's really, that must be so inspiring and really validating.
No, totally is. Yeah.
What is like a day in the life of your job? What do you do?
Luckily, something that I think is, how do I word this? Something that I found really exciting about working in social media is that there isn't really a day in the life. Like there are more average days, but you know, social media encompasses so many things, like live event coverage and video content, and also the day-to-day sort of relaying of news onto every platform and cover stories and all these things. And so I think a really average, typical like Tuesday in my life is a very, wake up in the morning, check what has happened overnight since I last was on my phone news-wise, see if there's anything glaring that needs to go up on social like right away. And then just make sure like everything, I don't even know how to explain it, like just make sure everything has been updated. And you know, it's like Lorde announced her new album today. Like that's an announcement. Just keeping your eye on, like, we have a lot of news, other publications and news alerts on for artists and post notifications and everything. So it's kind of like waking up and reading the morning paper and then figuring out what content from the morning paper could also exist in a visual form or in a short form video form, you know, and then coming up with plans for that. It's like a fun little challenge to be able to take like a long form investigative piece, for example, or a really researched cover story and like create it or break it down into bite-sized pieces, things that I would read while scrolling and like send to my friends, because that's ultimately one of the big goals of social, is like you want people to just spread your news far and wide in ways that make sense.
Yeah, I was gonna say, like, it's obviously like, well, obvious to us, but Rolling Stone covers way more than just music, right?
Yeah.
So it's, that's like part of it. And I even just opening the Instagram this morning, I was cracking up at like, I saw the Lorde announcement, obviously, but before that was like the Gorilla the 100 men versus one girl a debate, and the top comment says, "This is journalism," and I just love that.
It's true, and like that's like the fun kind of thing where it's like you'll see something percolating, you know, and it's a team effort. Obviously, with most publications, it's like something percolates, we start noticing there's a conversation happening online. Someone drops it into like a certain news or channel on Slack. Everyone starts having discourse. Mm. One of our writers starts interviewing people who work with girls, like just to see what they would say. They write a very well-researched story, and it comes in a little bit late on a workday evening. It's just so funny and too good to like keep until the morning. So we stay at the office a little bit later to create graphics and come up with this like fun little swipe through thing. And so like that's something you wouldn't be able to predict ahead of time, you know. It's like it was a trend,
exactly,
it became a trend piece, and then the culture team wrote it up, we took that piece that they wrote up and created it into like a social media friendly way that obviously links back to the full story online. So it's kind of a fun little collaboration.
That is, and that so validates your point of saying that not every day is the same, because not every day you're going to be writing about a gorilla. Like,
exactly.
I can imagine, like, it changes things up. It keeps things interesting.
Definitely.
In terms of, yeah, collaboration, communication, like, do you have, how much, like, autonomy do you have with posting? Do you have to get things, like, approved, or how does that work?
That's a good question. We have, like, a really great team at Rolling Stone of four people, and so everyone sort of divvies up platforms, responsibilities, and just like even perspective, which I think is the most valuable thing, is like,
yeah,
we all obviously have our own media digests and ways of, you know, it's, I think we're really lucky because I think all of us on our team kind of exist in like a different genre in some ways, you know what I mean? Like we all have overlap, but certain people are seeing things that I'm not seeing and vice versa. And so I think there's a lot of even inner team collaboration of like, hey, this thing would be worth posting. And I would not have had that on my radar without someone suggesting that. So it's a bit of a free for all, even if we have an idea, it's like, what's the best way to deliver that idea that would hit as many audiences as possible? Is there a way to make this small niche thing a lot more universal? And so in terms of approval, it's like our boss, our director, who is great and very open to a lot of ideas.
That's so important.
Yeah. And then obviously, like, we run things past like the edit team a lot in case they're writing a story that happens to line up with that. Like, that would just accentuate the ability to include information. But yeah, it's kind of a also trial and error thing. It's like, in order to find what Rolling Stone specific demographics engage with online, you've got to toss a ton of shit at the wall and see what sticks, you know?
Right.
And that's been fun too, because it's like, it allows us to take risks and also allows us to know what is tried and true and always works.
I love that. And I think I did like social media marketing. It was so poorly run. Like the amount of people who had to approve like one thing and then, you know, they had such a rigid idea of like what the brand should be and what is okay and what's not. And there's like no element of risk taking that I think ended up
totally
just like backfiring so much.
Totally.
That's like, that just contradicts the purpose of social media in a way.
Yeah, exactly. No, I totally, that's a great point, because I think that's maybe something our team is aligned on, which feels really lucky, is like, just try things, you know what I mean? And I really think that that has proven successful for our brand in particular. Obviously, we want to stay within the confines of like what we're covering for the most part, but it's like a trickle down thing. Like when leadership is a little bit more open to like experimental posts and let's try this thing once. Like it doesn't have to become a franchise, or it doesn't have to become like how we always cover this specific topic, but see how it goes. Like see if it works, and if it doesn't, we cut it. You know, it's like there's really no harm, no foul in
exactly
giving something a whirl. And like, yeah, we've had things that just didn't go off the way we thought they were, and was like, okay, well, that was a flop. We won't do that again. But it's like, what did we lose by trying? I think so. I think that there's a lot of value in being able to just, you know, what I hate these phrases, but it's like keep your finger on the pulse and. Just like know what people are because, you know, like all of us are, at least on our team, like we work in social media, we also are social media users. And so it's like, I know what I engage with. Being able to just even talk to my friends who don't work in media at all and see what they're listening to or watching and reading. It's super helpful that we can sort of bring that back to the workplace and take inspiration from other forms of social media. Yeah,
that's such an important part of it. And that's what makes it fun and like fresh, I'm sure, too. It doesn't become redundant in any way in that sense. What's your favorite part about the job?
I always say that I entered this job because I'm a really nosy person.
I love that.
I love shooting off that first like piece of information to the group chat. Like once news breaks, it's like, I want to be the first to tell you like this thing happened. And so I think that there's a rush that I get from being able to just like hear news as it happens,
right.
Be like sort of on the front lines of like gossip. Because ultimately that's what a lot of people view it as, and maybe it's not too far off. But also I think there's something really special and exciting about being at the scene. It's like something about being like, you know, getting to go to shows and like actually talk to the artist at that show, you know what I mean? And like being at like a photo shoot and being able to just see how the whole thing comes together. I think there's been something really, it's just like, it scratches the itch that the little kid me always had of like, how do these things even work? Like, how do teams run? Like teams that aren't even media, just like a photo shoot team or an artist management team. Like, it's just so fun to see how many moving parts there are to like a successful either magazine photo shoot or interview backstage at a concert. And I think that's been just fun. And I like meet a lot of people that are like camera ops or like lighting people. I'm sure there's a word for that. Or just like publicists that I'm like so fascinated at how they got to do what they do, and that we're all somehow now working together to create one product. It's super exciting.
Yeah, that resonates with me too. I would say more specific to like new music, I always like, it feels so important to me to want to be like the friend that tells everyone about, you know, the first to know or something. So satisfying.
So satisfying. I'm like, it's unfortunately like, I don't think I'll ever grow out of that.
Yeah. No, but it obviously has served you well. So it worked out to be nosy.
Yeah.
It's such an interesting balance of like, you're obviously creating this whole digital identity, but a lot of what you're doing is hands-on at the same time. Like, I know you have that really fun series you do with the playlist shuffle with some artists. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah. So that was one of those ideas that was, again, like throw it at the wall and see if it sticks type of things.
I love it.
Because we were like, yeah, thank you. It's really fun. It was very much like we were in the office one day and we were like, we need to do something fun. I'm bored. Let's do something fun. And so I remember like I had gotten out a piece of printer paper and a Sharpie, which like people don't do that anymore enough. And I was just like writing down like a bunch of ideas. It was me and like a couple other people on our team. And something I've always, you know, people do a lot of street interviews these days, and I'm kind of like, I don't feel either way about them, but I felt like that was kind of something that could be fun even to try once. And I'm always curious what people are listening to actually,
right?
Instead of like what you choose to like share to your Instagram story, like which Spotify link you want to post.
Right,
like what comes on at your most vulnerable, you know, like when you're like in the shower and you can't skip the song, like what's playing.
That's such a good perspective.
I think that idea came to be like not even a year ago. It was like GovBall time last summer, and we were like, well, why don't we try doing a couple there? And we did a couple there, and the concept has really stayed the same. In that we just want to know what people are have on their liked songs. But I think like the ways in which we film them and how we sort of frame the shot, you know what I mean? Like, do we actually like point it at their phone or do they play it out loud? Like what's, you know, just like kind of figure out what works. But it has been a really fascinating thing to do. And I think it started off just as a joke, and then suddenly we have like Chris Martin from Coldplay doing it, and then Claro and Addison Rae and like Phineas. As the concept has sort of taken shape, people are a lot more open to wanting to do it, because like who doesn't love talking about themselves?
Right And music,
and like when they found this song, right? It's like such a fun concept. Like now every time I like put my own playlist on shuffle, I pretend I'm on the show, even though it's like the show I host.
I love that.
I'm like, ooh, like that would be embarrassing, you know.
That's so funny. I'm gonna do that.
No, literally. And so I think it's been really fun. And it's, I don't know, artists have really enjoyed doing it. I think it's a little bit of like a vulnerable position to be in, but also a great position because a lot of people or a lot of artists obviously love to hype up other artists. And it's always really fun when one of their friends comes on or like someone who like is no longer with us, but has inspired their music comes on. And it's like a very wholesome sort of concept. And most of the time, it's like completely unscripted. Like, I mean, it's always unscripted, but like, it's really what's on their playlist. So it's kind of, it's like not a fluke.
Has anyone ever been like, you have to cut this? This is too embarrassing.
Of course. Yeah. But it's also like whenever it lands on someone embarrassing, I do my little annoying thing where it's like, come on.
You have to. That's really funny.
And like usually those are like the most, like the funniest responses that we get.
I'm sure. Lucy Dacus was playing hers and then like Elliot Smith came on and like I'm a huge Elliot fan and a huge Lucy fan.
Yeah.
And I was like, wait, I never thought about that. Makes so much sense that like he's a huge influence for her. And then it makes you feel more connected to that artist.
Yeah, exactly. It's been so funny. I think I forget like exactly who I'm talking about, but it was someone who's like X's X came on their own play, like their own liked songs. And we just like looked at each other and then just hit next. Like it was not even like, so there's obviously like moments like that who, or where we're like, yeah, that makes sense to cut that one out.
Yeah,
but...
yeah. Really funny. That's a
but also like example, I wish we could have kept it in. Like that would have been crazy.
Do you ever get like intimidating doing interviews? Because you always just seem so chill. So, like it seems like every person I've seen you interview, I'm like, damn, they're like besties. Like well, you just have I think you do a good job of making them feel comfortable.
That's really kind. I always like sort of jokingly say like I never like signed up to be on camera because I didn't like it was never a like goal of mine to be an on-camera host. I'm like super like awkward.
No, Sam, this is why this podcast is audio only.
Yeah, like I can't focus if I know people are like watching my face move. I think like, well, like that even being said, like if you go back and look for the first song shuffle ever posted, I would not recommend doing that because I'm embarrassed by it. It's still up. But it's like my body language is so, it's like I'm a turtle in a shell and I like do not want to be there. But I was having a great time.
Yeah.
But I think that sort of like the forceful nature of like committing to this idea has been like, girl, you're going to get it together or you're not going to do this anymore. And so, yeah, I think I don't necessarily have the most like bubbly personality, but I feel like I'm just leaning into being, someone told me I have a jazzy ass radio voice one time. which I don't see it, but I'll take it. Like, I think that could be sort of where I stay.
Like,
I'm not going to be like running up to people on the street and like being like, this is for the other people to shine. It's like not about me, you know? But I think there's probably something comforting maybe in that, just me being like really calm.
It feels like you're not like, I think a lot of, especially like the street interviews, people can be just like so extroverted and like so on. And it just, it's so not me. And I think, I'm sure there's so many people that resonates with, because like, then when you see something like, you know, your interviews, it's a little more humanizing and it like grounds the person you're talking to also, because then they kind of feed off of that same energy.
No, well, thank you. It's nice. I think that's probably like what I've been trying to get at, where I was like, I remember when I was, because I like had the idea for the show, did not realize I was going to be the one on camera doing it. And so when I was told to be doing that, I was like, oh my God, I'm going to have to like learn how to be like cutesy and silly. And then I think when I just kind of resigned to the fact that like my voice doesn't like go above a certain pitch, like it got easier.
Yeah, you just accepted what you're working with. Yeah.
Right.
I also wanted to ask, I know you still do some writing for Rolling Stone as well. And you did a really, really amazing interview for Bon Iver's new album. Can you kind of talk about what that experience was like and like your connection to his music?
Yeah, well, I'd love to talk about Bon Iver. It was a review going like sort of hearkening back to everything I was saying about like my upbringing and like my just sort of path into where I am currently. The one artist that I've like consistently loved was Bon Iver, which he's just excellent in general. And I think many, many people feel this way, but it was something about, I think even like sonically, I feel like my journey sort of mirrors his own album release timeline. Because, you know, everyone's first experience with Bon Iver was for Emma Forever Ago, which was like the acoustic Man in the Woods album. Like,
yeah.
he was kind of like the OG person that did that. And I think like growing up, you know, like I was listening to Christian rock music and I was listening to like things of that nature. Mm-hmm. And like, it's just like such a personal experience, but like that sort of music was like looped into that kind of thing. Like,
right.
There was like the Acoustic Cabin was like a very Christian feeling thing.
That makes sense. Yeah.
I think there was like that period where it was like this really beautiful music and like holds up to this day beyond how I would ever imagine it to. But it was like palatable and it was digestible in a way that was like my parents would hear it on the radio and love it, you know?
Yeah.
In college, when I started reckoning with a lot of these like previously held beliefs that I had, Bon Iver released this album called 20 to a Million, which was like sort of his own reckoning too with like religion and also just his sound. And I think his public image. And that album was just like this vocoder heavy sort of electronic folk wall of noise.
Right.
And I think a lot of the people that had previously like listened to him for that Cabin in the Woods sound were like, what the hell is going on here? You know?
Right.
But that album is probably like, to me, a perfect record start to finish. And also just came out at a time where like I really was going through my own transformation. It was just like, it sounds like when I hear it, it sounds like Change. So like his music has always just like been around at a time where I've like really needed it personally.
Yeah,
And I've always admired him as like a songwriter and as a musician. Like everyone also, every musician has drawn inspiration from Justin Vernon.
Yeah.
The album that he just released, Sable Fable, is sort of this, like people call it his like happier album. I don't know if that's like, productive or not, but it is like the easiest way to describe it is like he is finally just like experiencing peace and not fighting it anymore. And I think that that's sort of the current era that I'm in. And of course, life ebbs and flows and things happen. And I'm sure a sad album will come from him again one day. But like he's just like the songwriter of my lifetime is what I like to call him.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think being able to like review or write the review of this most recent album felt, it was like one of those moments where it's like, does it get better than that? You know?
Yeah.
Was one of those moments that actually made me like stop and reflect on having to like sort of forge my own path in terms of taste and music and career. Like I had no connections to the entertainment industry, still don't. Like my parents are like, what? They like finally know what Rolling Stone is, so it's like that's pretty chill, you know. Yeah, right. And so it's like that feels good too. It's like my grandparents actually know what Rolling Stone is, so that feels like really like affirming in some ways. But it just felt like, again, here comes the woo-woo, is like this sort of full circle moment of, you know, doing things for the love of the game isn't always like a losing battle. Like there's times where it does work and there's times where like you just see something you want to do and you work hard for it. Like there's still so much that I like want to learn and that I think I have room to improve, but it's nice to get to a point where you're like, oh, it all sort of makes sense, you know?
Yeah, very full circle. And like how lucky are you that someone as talented as him was like the parallel to your career that you connected with. Like, I guess it's not a coincidence, but it must be, that is really affirming to sort of have him on your side of like along through that experience, because it sounds so personal.
Yeah, it's so funny too, because it's like, really, what business does like a 20-year-old Chinese American girl have to relate with like a 40-year-old white dude? Like genuinely, I asked myself, like, I'm like, oh, me and him are on the same path, and it's like, girl, no, you have nothing in common. But it's like you take what you can get from things, you know. It's like you make art your own.
Yeah, no, but I think that would be like exactly what he would want to happen, right? Because like any dude with a beard in Brooklyn could easily, like, it's an obvious one, but I'm sure that there's right. So much more, like it's deeper than that. You're not one of the bros that probably read the review that you wrote and then went and listened to it or something.
Yeah, I like to think that my background gives me a little bit of perspective that's somewhat unique.
It sounds like it. It definitely does. And so you got the opportunity to meet him?
Yeah, it was actually just at an event he was doing on his press tour for the new album. I remember just being like, oh, I'll probably like one day I'll talk to him, you know, like I have nothing to say other than like what he's hearing every single day, which is that like, oh, thank you for your music. Like it's helped me a lot, you know. something I didn't want to do at first, but then I was like, wait, I don't actually know if like there's going to be another opportunity to say what I need to say now, you know, and like, exactly. even if what I want to say is like a sentence long. And so my friends kind of nudged me to like say something, and I just like was able to say thank you for writing that album 22 a million.
To have that connection still, it must be almost like a reminder of like, this is why you're doing it, because there's just this like instilled passion you have for music and your connection to it. And I'm glad you did that, because I would have felt the same way. I'd been like, I should have done that.
No, literally, like, hey, I'm like, God. Like, I knew if I left and didn't say anything, I'd be like, well, it was like a lose-lose situation kind of thing.
Yeah, right, right. That's always what I do. If I'm like trying to figure, I'm like, will I leave more angry that I didn't say anything than embarrassed that I did? Like, that's...
Right, exactly.
I think but they lose the plot a little bit or get lost. It's sort of what you were saying earlier. I think in the music industry specifically, you're always looking for the next win or like the next thing. Like you never really take a minute to really embrace like your wins. And I think in those moments, like that's that time for you to like kind of have like, oh yeah, this is what I'm doing this for.
Totally. Yeah, it's true.
And to kind of wrap things up, I have a couple last questions. For someone who's interested in entering music or journalism or something along those realms, like what advice would you give them?
I guess again I know we kind of touched on like, I don't know what the climate necessarily is because I'm not a student anymore,
right,
in terms of what opportunities are out there, but I think something that still applies is just like being sort of unashamed in terms of reaching out to people,
because
I think the wider you cast your net, the higher the percentage of an opportunity you're going to get some response.
Mm-hmm.
I think that there's something really valuable in just like shooting your shot and being a little bit intense about what you want. Again, I say this off the grain of salt, like don't be annoying.
right. That is a fine line.
Right. It doesn't hurt to like put yourself out there. And I know that's like the lamest advice of all, but like it really is like it'll happen if it's meant to happen kind of thing.
Mm-hmm. And it kind of even goes back to like meeting Bon Iver. It's like, are you going to be mad that you didn't take the risk of like, you know, it's trivial to say like, of just saying hi to him, or are you going to be like a little like embarrassed and have a little shame about it, but then feel really good that you did it? And like, that's
exactly. I think that there's something so irreplaceable about actually having convictions around the things that you like that will actually help you. Like, I think specificity actually helps you get what you want more. If I just generally want success, like, what is that? Like, what steps am I going to take to get closer to that? It's really vague and it's really just like intimidating.
Yeah.
But like, if I know I really, really like this artist, I'm going to like start liking things under the umbrella of that artist. And I'm going to be able to start like grabbing at things that are maybe like not that artist per se yet, but things in that world. And then like, I get to get immersed in that world. And the more immersed I am in that world, the like bigger it becomes.
That's what not to get woo woo again, but like, that's what they say about manifesting. It's like, you have to be really specific. Yeah.
There we go. And I'll, like, at the end of the day, like, maybe I am woo-woo. Like, we don't even have to fake it anymore. Like, no, that's just who I am, you guys.
Well, awesome. All right, cool. And then the last question I have, if you had to create an album name or title for your music career so far, what would you name it?
So I, like, this question was haunting me the entire podcast.
I'm sure. Sorry.
But a low-hanging fruit when I have... these tattoos on my knees that say memory garden. And it wasn't even something I chose myself. It was like my friend's Flash. He does tattoos and he has like the sheet. And I just saw those words memory garden. And I was like, need that so bad. And I think as I got them tattooed almost as a premonition, because I think once I got them tattooed onto my body permanently, I started like finding more reasons they had meaning. You know what I mean? Like, oh, that's what that means to me. And I think there are just like several songs that I love that either talk about gardens or just like the concept of memory.
Mm-hmm.
And obviously when you put the two together, what you get is a garden of memories. And I think that is sort of like how I live my life. It's like, I don't forget shit. Like, I remember everything. I think it ties into that full circle thing. It's like when you are so aware of the things you've gone through and the people you've met and like the experiences that you've had or the ways that you've been, you like can't shake that. Like, it becomes like embedded into who you are.
Right.
I think that like that is literally what life is, which is a sort of collection of everything you've ever experienced. How I try to operate is like honoring the ability to remember so much and to carry that with me into every phase of life.
That's beautiful. I think garden is a really nice word, because it's like gardens have, it's not all beautiful, you know, it has thorns and it has a lot of different components, but it's nice that you honor all of it, because that's so important. Thank you so much. This was like really, really fun picking your brain. I feel like I've learned so much. So I'm really excited for what's to come for you.
Thank you so much. I hope that was even usable at all.
Oh my God, it totally was.